You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi from True Crime Today.
Featuring forensic evidence expert Scott Roeder from Evidence Room.
Let's talk about Chad and Lori Daybell, specifically Chad Daybell, his trial coming up early next year. One of the interesting battles I'm finding right now is the argument for cameras in the court or not. Typically, we don't see the defendants wanting the cameras in the court. In this case, Chad and his team say they want them. The prosecution saying, no, I don't think we really do. It is going to be in the same place where Lori had her trial. If you remember there, we did not have cameras in that courtroom either. We just had audio. What's your thoughts on this? Is this bizarre that the defendant would want to have cameras on him in a case like this where it does very much look extremely damning almost any way you spin it?
Well, it's a very interesting point. I think if you're Chad Daybell, right, you've really got nothing to lose, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if he thinks, and he's obviously going to be, in my opinion, I think he's going to testify for himself. This guy is an incredible, I don't think you have to be a psychologist, psychiatric expert to pin that tail on that donkey.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so this guy for sure wants the cameras in his courtroom because, you know, that's going to, unless he gets the death penalty, or even if he gets the death penalty, this is his last crazy flipping sermon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he wants the cameras and he has the right to have the cameras. I think if a defendant wants the cameras in the courtroom, obviously in federal court, you're not allowed to have cameras in the courtroom, and that's fine. You got the pencil sketch artists and, you know, they do a good job of documenting that kind of stuff. But in state court, it is your right to have cameras, to have an open proceeding, open to the public, open to the press. And I believe having cameras in the courtroom does give a certain illumination to the process on how justice is made. And, you know, I've been on camera many times when I testified, and then there are many cases where there's no cameras at all. There's not even a reporter in the back of the courtroom because there's nothing of public interest that they think. But I think, I guess you have to weigh yourself if you're the judge on this. Does this case have something to add to the public that the public needs to see? Or can they just read about it in the papers? You know, I don't know. I'm not smart enough to answer the yes or no on that, but I think it is the defendant's right to have it if he wants it.
Yeah, my thought is, or question really is, does it help in his defense in any way, shape, or form, or does it not? Obviously, I agree. I think if he wants them, why not? You know, why not let the public see and have a more open record of this case that so many people have emotionally, you know, invested themselves in, and some even further.
Well, I mean, you know, we live. I told myself I wasn't going to talk about the state of the world, Tony, but I want to see if I can make some broad strokes here.
Okay.
Just, you know, from the standpoint of the world we live in, right? We live in a world filled with hysteria, where the war beat, the drum beat of war can be heard on every station. The bloodthirst, the spectacle of suffering, whether it's on the national, international stage, or whether it's a guy who thinks he, you know, is some prophet for some weird religion and all these innocent people die as a result of it. I guess the question is, do we need to see it as a society? Do we need to see the insanity of the decrepit nature of the human condition, mm-hmm. and be visually bombarded with that? And are we better for it as a society if we stand and just bear witness to the horror? Do we have some obligation to not be so overwhelmed and bombarded by images that we may or may not want in our heads?
I think that's a fair question. There are, I think, a lot of things that have been coming out, certainly in this case and many others, that are just what I think the public would classify as icky. And you don't want to think about it too much because Sometimes I think these characters remind us of people that we know, sometimes people that we love, and some of their characteristics and personality flaws or directions that they go in sometimes raise red flags. But we all oftentimes, especially if we think we know the person, it's always, well, you know, it's their world, it's their thing, you know, it's probably nothing bad. But then we find all too often in some of these cases, that's exactly how many family members feel until they realize, oh my gosh, what on earth has my sister, my cousin, my spouse, my friend, my whatever done? I'm thinking of like Ruby Frankie and Jody Hildebrand. There's so many cases that we've seen where it's just, it's too much to take on as a human, I think, sometimes to process and try to grasp that human beings are capable of such deplorable behavior.
Yeah, to me, I think it's from the standpoint of how do we, there has to be justice, okay? Mm-hmm. Justice must exist, but justice is measured and justice should be without vengeance, right? Because that's the basis of our criminal justice system, is justice without vengeance. And sometimes the details of these cases are so horrible that the general public, I don't think, need be concerned with it too much. However, I think some of it needs detailed analysis, of course, in the courtroom. I guess the bigger picture here is what gets us to forgiveness first, right? Mm-hmm. I'm working on cases right now in other countries, Tony, where the person who's been convicted of a crime, even though they've served their judicial time that was sentenced upon them for their crime, they are not allowed to get out of jail and probation until both the mother and the father forgive him in private. And, you know, I think that is something that I think people should talk about is, you know, how do we start forgiving? You know, how do victims of crimes be urged to, seek justice, but also forgive, right? You know, that's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately is, you know, how do we forgive? How do we not get swept up in the, you know, horrific nature of things and just move forward with this anger? And on these individual, like, for example, the case that I was talking about, the Oscar Pistorius case, mm-hmm. you know, I believe Reva Steenkamp's father has forgiven Oscar. He served 10 years and he's now, it's up to Oscar to ask Reva's mother for forgiveness. And he'll probably stay in jail until, you know, he gains her forgiveness. And I think forgiveness is an important thing to talk about when we're talking about these horrific crimes, Tony. Just feel obligated today to just have some kind of message of peace and forgiveness, and hopefully that permeates somewhere.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.
Scott Roeder, our guest today. Scott, tell them more about what you do.
Here at the Evidence Room, we employ a team of engineers, medical illustrators, 3D modelers, and animators under my direction to reconstruct cases of personal injury, medical malpractice, police officer-involved shooting cases, both defending and on the plaintiff side, and in criminal court, as probably what I'm most well-known for in my personal testimony. But we have a full company that serves internationally on issues of demonstrative evidence and forensic animation. And we get hired by lawyers, by cities, by insurance companies, and by private citizens to augment investigations through their legal teams. We can be found at the web on evidence-room.net, and we service everywhere. And if you need us and we can help, we'll do the best we can for you.